I'm going to leave this line open. If you have noise going on in the background or if you're on a speakerphone and we start to pick up an echo, just press star 6, and that'll take you off of, put you on mute, excuse me, individually. And then if there's a comment or a question, you can just press star 6 and come back off. For the next 4 weeks, we're going to take on the topic of the observer's chair and begin the process of healing your self-esteem. I am so excited you've been willing to participate, and giant thank you for helping get this word out to people. As I mentioned in the very beginning of the book, this started out as an idea. When I wrote Today I Begin a New Life, I wrote it to help people avoid self-esteem challenges, and self-esteem was going to be saved for later. And then Joe Soto, our social media guru, asked if I would please write a quick, he called it a down and dirty ebook, just a 10-page ebook on self-esteem with some good information that he could use to help promote the book Today I Begin a New Life. And I started writing, I think it was that evening, best I remember. What I do know for sure is it lasted for 30 nights, 30 straight nights. And I don't think there was more than a couple, maybe 3 hours of sleep at any given night for those 30 days. I have never written with such urgency in my life. It was just download after download of information that was so important, driven by having read 4,800 assessments. We'll talk about the assessment. If you haven't taken it already, I'll ask you to do that, so I can assist you as we go deeper into this process over the next 4 weeks. This is really the crux. This is the core. This is the center of the universe, so to speak, of all of the issues that we have as an individual. This is the dialogue we have with ourself about ourself. This isn't about our world and how we fit in it. This isn't about what motivates us and drives us, or how we feel about other people or doing tasks. This is the dialogue we have with ourselves about ourselves. And I still remember, I did not put this in the book, but I was speaking, I was about a week into the writing, and I had written the first chapter and, you know, into the second and third, and I was speaking for a company by the name of Obio. If you've ever looked at a real estate site, where you're taking a virtual tour of a house, about 95% chance it's driven by an OBO engine. That's what they do. They provide the horsepower for virtual tours, and they've got the photographers all over the country. They're taking the pictures and et cetera, et cetera. Well, I was standing in their national sales meeting. I'd been asked to come and give a keynote speech, and I'm standing in front of all their salespeople. I can see it just like right now. And there was a chair over the side. And I started saying, you know, we have this unique gift. This gift to step back and reflect on our own thinking. And I said, you know, tragically, we don't always use this gift. But when we do, we're the observer of our thoughts. And I walked over and I sat down my chair. We're sitting in the observer's chair. And until that point, this book was called Healing Self-Esteem. That was the name of the book. Until that very moment, I knew right there, standing on the stage, that the title just came, The Observer's Chair. And I started talking about this observer's chair, that when we're in this chair, in the observer's chair, this is when we're feeling whole and complete and real and genuine and authentic. This is a glorious place. If you can turn to the book, to the PDF, if you have it there handy, on page 7, we talk about this. I came back and rewrote this chapter using that phrase, the observer's chair. And that we sit here, this is when we're really truly being ourselves, whole and complete, comfortable in our own skin. We all know this place. This is where we get those inspired ideas that we act on that ignite our passion. This is a good place. there in front of us about 10 feet, I'm just using that as an example, it's not an exact distance, but over there in front of us is that other chair over there. That's what it's called, the other chair over there. Our unhealthy habits of thinking. And Og said, and I quote at the beginning of this chapter, I surrender my free will to these years of accumulated habits and the past deeds of my life. I've already marked out a path which threatens to imprison my future. Tonight, the very first thing I want us to be pondering is what happens when I'm over there. What we know is this. The dialogue that we hear when we're over there sounds first person, so we think it's us. It sounds like us. And some of the thought processes that can trap us over there, fantasy, catastrophe, they cause the release of certain molecules in our body. And we can actually feel at a cellular level those feelings, those thought processes. So we can become very attached. We can become attached to the thought, and we can become attached to the drama around that thought. I just want us all tonight to first have our first moment of awareness. The first moment of awareness is this. That dialogue, even though it's first person, even though we're attached to both the thought and the drama around that thought, that is not our real voice. It's first person. Sounds like us. But that's not who we are. It's just not who we are. And my mission for the next 4 weeks is to give you a better understanding of the kinds of things that can get us over there, keep us over there, what it might sound like in your life. Once you apply this so you start to hear it. Because awareness is a significant percentage of the battle, because once we can hear it for what it is and not have it be what we are, I think that's who I am. No, we step back and actually hear it. Just step back and hear it. Then we're at a place where we can make a different choice. And what I want to be able to do is assist you in being aware in the moment, standing, and coming over here and sitting in this chair, getting you here quicker and having you stay here longer. You know what this feels like? I remember sharing this in a coaching session, and someone said, Dave, I'm back and forth 6 times a day. That's true. Just make sure you keep coming back here. And eventually, this conversation, I'm sitting in my chair where I wrote this book, looking over there at that other chair, and sometimes I'm over there, and sometimes I'm over here, and sometimes I'm over there, and sometimes over here, and going back and forth here. The objective is to get into this chair and then turn this chair around and have a different conversation, an ennobling conversation, an empowering conversation, one where inspired ideas and impressions and solutions to challenges could be manifest, answers to our questions, because physiologically we are built for this conversation. We're not built for the other one. We're built for this one, because when those impressions come, it ignites part of our brain that's normally dormant in a human being. Just do that with me. Just go. It lights up our passion. And we work without counting the cost or tracking the time. We're so excited. This is the conversation we're going to want to start to develop. However, it's hard to have this conversation. I'm turning back around now. I'm looking at that other chair over there. When we just keep going back and forth and back and forth between these two chairs. So when I get here sooner, stay here long enough to start experiencing this new conversation. This new conversation is very, very powerful. Now, in terms of the observer's chair, this idea of sitting here being whole and complete, our true self, does anyone have a question before we go into this comparison game, this first big challenge that we could face? Anybody have a question? And I do want you to know that anytime someone has, I use the word courage because in a group where you don't know each other, sometimes it could be uncomfortable raising a voice. But I promise you that when you do, not only will it serve you, but it will serve everybody on this call. So feel comfortable in asking questions so that we can begin this exploration. Well, I want you to turn to page 11 of the PDF. This may be the most important statement in the entire book, the opening to this chapter. No matter how loud, obnoxious, sabotaging, or destructive our internal dialogue may be, just look over there. So I'm just pointing back over at that chair. No matter what our thoughts may want us to believe, no matter what we've done, because those thoughts want to hold us hostage to all those things, or what has been done to us, we are priceless and unique. We are nature's greatest miracle. We are the observer. Now, I love Robert Hartman's work. I've been studying it aggressively for the last 12 years. Robert Hartman was a scientist who had a PhD in mathematics, philosophy, and a Juris Doctorate. He could speak, I think, 7 languages. Amazing scientist. He set out to measure how we think. And there's an invitation in this paragraph to go to the appendix. I've got all kinds of resources there for you, and I'm going to give you some corrected ones that are now in the final printed book so you can access them tonight. Intentional Creation Assessment. To get to the assessment, go to augmandino.com. Augmandino.com. You can go /assessment. It'll take you right to the page, or just go right to the home page, and you can scroll down and take free assessment. It's free. You'll want to take that assessment. Dr. Hartman created a mathematics called axiological mathematics. It's born out of Cantor's transfinite calculus. When you're doing the assessment, it's relatively easy to do. You're just ranking words or phrases, but you're ranking mathematical structure for us. And it helps me know how you are thinking. And if you'll take that assessment and bring those results, bring them generally on the computer screen, just make sure they're up on a screen next week when we're meeting, I'd like to walk through, all of you on the phone, we can do this collectively as a group, on the very specific thought processes that impact self-esteem. So you see how you're doing. Then I can give you some very specific practices and processes to deal with those specific thoughts. So you're going to want to do this. Dr. Hartman was an amazing human being, scientist who deeply loved his life and his wife, I might tell you. Let's read this together. He says, unless you feel that you are of importance, nothing can be important to you. Isn't that interesting? You must feel that you are important. You must take yourself seriously. If you take yourself as an accident that just as well might not have happened, if you dislike your own self, then you are lost. You are lost to the universe. You cannot enrich the world. And then this powerful sentence, you have been created to enrich the world. I might add, as you find as you go into the other book, Today I Begin a New Life, that the most painful experiences we have had really are our greatest asset. I mentioned the Chicago Dream briefly in here. No matter what's happened to you, no matter what you've done, you are priceless and unique. And the uniqueness is a unique preparedness. And one of the great destroyers of self-esteem is the comparison game. So I want everybody just to hold out your hands, if you're hands-free, and just hold this block of clay. This block of clay. Because this block of clay is your life. That's what it's representing. Is your current unique life and life circumstances your greatest gifts, your greatest challenges? And the question is penetrating. It's poignant. It's painful. Where is our focus? Because this is one of the single greatest causes of challenges in self-esteem, is that here's my clay. Here are my challenges. Here's my unique life circumstances. I don't want these. I don't want these. This could be my dear friend who could say, I didn't want my heart to fail and have to have a transplant. I didn't want to discover that I've got Parkinson's disease a few months after. I didn't want my wife to file divorce because she can't put up with it anymore. I don't want these things. But those are his life circumstances. And our greatest challenge is that when we don't want what we have, we try to get something we don't have. I want her life. I want his body. I want her money. I want his job. But we don't have those things. This is what we have. And when we spend a great deal of our time wanting to be someone else, somewhere else, doing something different, we get trapped in that chair right over there. Because we end up living with thought processes where we feel resentful. This is easy to do. I was at lunch today with a dear friend who just took delivery on a $190,000 car. It was a blip. He won't even miss the money. He just sold his company for $200 million. Anybody go, oh man, I wish I had that. But that's his. And he's got his own life set of circumstances to deal with. We've got ours. Now, I mention in here, because I mentioned earlier in the book, that I had been put in the care and keeping of a pedophile for 2 years as a small child. And I wrote in here, I wanted to be somebody else. I felt trapped. When I stood holding my clay while reflecting on my childhood, I felt broken, unworthy, and incapable. Later in life, when I stood holding my clay while reflecting on the loss of our material wealth, I felt paralyzed, wanting to go back to happier days in an attempt to reclaim the clay I believe was lost. How are we holding our clay? Do we want something we have never had and long to receive, believing our happiness is contingent on having it? Do we embrace and honor, fully maximize our greatest gifts, or do we minimize the value of these gifts, wanting something more or different? Have we become our stuff, or has the loss of stuff or lack of stuff left us feeling less than? Where are we sitting? On what are we focused? Is it on creation or comparison? I spent too much of my life on comparison. It's really easy to do. I got a whole list of them here. If I only had her body, hair, wardrobe, car, home, if only I had more education, money, or intelligence, if only I had more interesting career, better health, a different companion, more obedient children, better family lineage, or more luck. If only is in ad nauseum. One of the great gifts, one of the defining gifts in healing self-esteem is the day we say, that we don't give in. This isn't about acquiescing and saying, I give up. One of the great moments in healing self-esteem is when I begin to take what I've been given and create the most I can with it. Now, I finally put this in print. It's at the bottom of page 13. I've heard this so many times with new coaching clients in their assessment debriefs. I said, we may not plan suicide, but we would be okay if we got in an accident and died. Or could drive into that telephone pole or cement wall and have our cause of death ruled an accident. When playing the comparison game, it is not uncommon for us to take 10 10 amazing people, select their best qualities, create one superhuman, and beat ourselves up for not stacking up. I don't want to beat this up. I don't want to be in a dark dungeon tonight. I just know that this is where we can go so easily. We can even, as I mentioned the next paragraph, raise above someone by saying, well, at least I don't have that, or at least I don't have that. That's the comparison game, too. This is a wonderful thing for us to realize. I remember when a coaching client said this. When we are stuck in the chair of our unhealthy habits of thinking, about two-thirds of the way down on page 14, letting go of comparison can be, as one client recently wrote, like asking me not to breathe. In truth, the day I chose to own my clay was the day I started breathing. And this can be true for you too. I'm going to walk you through these steps so you can begin the process of owning your clay. The first one is about loving thyself. I use these references because these came from Dr. Hartman. And he says, self-love is about having reverence for the infinite and intrinsic gift of life, starting with your own clay. It's about honoring and magnifying our gifts, creating the most we can with what we've been given. Now, I'm going to walk you through how we do this. Step one, it's on page 15. Know thyself. I would like everybody to do a personal inventory. This is truthful and introspective, past and present. Want to identify your gifts and talents, current condition of your finances, relationships, physical health, and spiritual lives. And some of us can say, gosh, Dave, this is a lot. I'm so busy. I got so much going on. There is nothing more important than you being okay with you. Because when you're okay with you, everything else works. So let's take this inventory. Want to examine failures and successes, hurts and victories, everything. For good or for ill, we do not create unfavorable life circumstances by looking at them. We just shed light on them and put them in proper perspective. So we want to shed light in this area and get really clear about what's going on in our life right now. This was the topic of Ramona's and my weekend. It's in today's financial climate. What kind of decisions do we want to make in terms of where we live and how we live? What kind of home we live in? What is wise? What is happening? What is not happening? What choices? We've made some very interesting shifts in the direction we want to take our life and business just from this weekend. It's a beautiful thing to take this inventory. You can do it by yourself or you can do it with a companion. Now, once we know, then we want to say, okay, choose thyself, page 16. Once we've identified our life experience, the kind of person we have been, and the assets with which we have to work, we'll want to choose ourself, warts and all. This is the clay we've been given to work with, the gift and circumstances with which we can begin to build our new life. Today I begin a new life. Today I shed my old skin. I'm going to get out of that chair. Be born anew. Now down a little bit further, the very bottom of page 16, we cannot build our lives on a false premise. When we get real about our life, it may seem there are no limits to the depths we must go in order to find bedrock on which to build. Dr. Harbin writes, but no matter how despicable you are to yourself, you must choose yourself, accept yourself as the one you are. I am the one I am. I said, this is the truth for now. But it will not always be so. This is the foundation on which we can begin to build our new life, and there is no ceiling to the growth that can be achieved when we choose to sit in the observer's chair and we start building from this bedrock foundation. This is true no matter how deep we must dig to find bedrock. Now, I must warn you, one of the great challenges with self-esteem is, I want to be that, not this. And when we start focusing on this, there is a risk that we could get discouraged by what we find. Well, just know that what you find is not being created by looking. We're just finally dealing with the truth of it. And I can tell you that when you finally do get past this first hesitancy, this kind of a uncomfort, this malaise you can feel, if you get past this and you say, okay, I'm going to be proactive based on this, and we start making good decisions, you will feel absolutely empowered. That puts you right here in the observer's chair. The fact that there are warts, all of us have warts, all of us have challenges, all of us have things we're working on. You don't have to be perfect to be in the observer's chair. You just have to be conscious, awake, and alert, and making wise decisions and good choices. That's what puts us in the chair. We can't get to these good choices and wise decisions pretending like it's something other than it is. Just know that. So part of healing in this choosing is what happens when we do choose. This enlightenment comes, this sense of ownership, this sense of, gosh, I'm finally doing something about this. Your soul will resonate. You'll feel it in your soul when you're making this decision. And now we begin on page 18. We begin the process of creating the most we can with the clay we've been given. And we start planning. Now, in the other book, Today I Begin a New Life, there's some goal-setting exercises you can go through and some other things to help in this area. We begin to create. We honor both the gift and the giver. Page 19. Here is another secret of success. As we create the most we can with the clay we have been given as a bonus, we not only experience increasing levels of success, we are also given more clay. As we're focusing on cleaning up this house, so to speak, we're starting to improve and get better. More opportunities open, more doors open. It's almost miraculous to watch. It's almost, I don't want to say scary, it's humbling. This only happens when we fully maximize the value of the gifts already given. And then I put this in writing finally. After all, why would the giver of clay give more clay to someone who devalues the clay they have already been given? Herein we find the foundational principle of abundance, magnifying our talents. When we magnify our talents, we're given more. This is a great thing to know. So now we're growing, and as we begin to grow, we start to have reserves, and we're able to give from a cup that's overflowing. The more honest and transparent we become, page 19 in the middle, with ourselves, the more we're able to get out of our own way. We grow unfettered by fear and shame or the need to compare. Our cup is filled and begins to run over. We have more and enough to spare. We give of ourselves freely and are fed. And feeling depleted, Dr. Hartman concluded with this. This means forget all limitations. Be generous with your own self. We might add, be kind to yourself. Give your own self and to your fellow man and to the world. Love your neighbor as yourself. Throw your bread on the water. It is in this giving of ourself to others that we finally find our true self, our true worth. Our pain and suffering finally have meaning and purpose. We want our clay. It's here that we find joy. Now, I just want to hang in there for a moment. If anybody wants to comment about this, please do. But at this moment in a discussion, it would be very common for someone saying, yes, but David, you don't understand. I go, yes, but you have no other choice. We don't get somebody else's clay. we may really not be happy at all with where we are, but this is where we are. This is our current circumstance. And I sense, at least it's been my experience, that when I embrace it and take it on, I learn something I would have never learned any other way. I grow, I stretch, I become. I'm granted more clay, and so can you. This isn't mystical. This is the most practical decision you'll ever make. The most practical decision to stop fighting, resisting, resenting, rebelling against, and embrace what is, so that you can begin the process of creating the most you can with it. Because it'll be in that transition that you'll finally find your true self. Now let's pause right there for a moment. Anyone have a question or a comment about this that I can help work through or process with anyone? Any thoughts?
Hey, may I ask a question?
I'm sorry?
May I ask a question? This is
Millie. Yes. Millie, is that right?
Yes, if I might ask you, you talk about...
I just need you to get just a little closer to the telephone if you can, Millie.
All right.
So we can hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. This is Millie. You speak about most of us, all of us, switch from one chair to the other frequently. Mm-hmm. What does that say for our discipline or our emotional status, or... is the goal to stay in the good chair more than the bad chair? Can you, or switch back and forth less frequently?
Well, from a practical standpoint, Millie, we're all human, right?
Right.
Is there a chance that something could happen during the day that just takes us off guard?
Right.
And we get discouraged and we start catastrophizing or worrying. Boom, we're in the other chair. That's going to happen. So when it happens, what we'll want to do is be conscious enough to know, whoa, stop right there, stop. I'm going to get back in the other chair. This is not going to serve me. I want to get back over as quickly as possible. Would the objective be to live in this chair? Absolutely.
True, yes.
Can you feel it when you're here, Millie?
Yep.
Do you know when you're here?
Right.
It's a beautiful place to be.
So the goal would be to stay in that chair longer each time until you can stay in it permanently? Or is that possible?
Absolutely possible. I mentioned a little bit, well, maybe it's getting close. It's called neuroplasticity. What we're dealing with is our habits of thinking. When Og says, I surrender my chair, my free will. To those habits of thinking, I get up and go sit down over there, and the past deeds of my life have already threatened to imprison my future. As we'll get a little bit deeper in the book, we'll talk about, Og says, my bad habits must be destroyed. And new furrows prepared for good seed. In other words, new neural pathways, new ways of thinking that will support me in staying in this chair. Because when we change a bad habit, that one won't pull us over there anymore. It doesn't exist. We will slowly cut one off and then cut off another one and cut off another one and cut off another one. Some of these are really stubborn. And it may be a while before we actually release them, if ever. But we do know that we can at least be conscious and override them. That's being the observer, right?
Right.
Eventually, we can actually eliminate them and be free of them. Isn't that a great idea? Og actually talked about this place. He talked about it in Scroll 1. He said, speaking of a time when a new habit of thinking has been created, he didn't know this in 1968, but the neuroscientists tell us when that new neural pathway is created, the old one is trimmed off. It's they call it synaptic pruning, pruned off. And he says, all of a sudden, I begin to awake each morning with a vitality I've never known before. My vigor will increase. My enthusiasm will rise. My desire to meet the world will overcome every fear I once knew at sunrise. And I'll be happier than I ever believed possible. And this end sentence is so telling. in this world of strife and sorrow. The world doesn't change. I change how I show up in the world. I've got new habits of thinking. Eventually, I'll find myself reacting to all situations which confront me, as I was commanded in the scroll, speaking of the scrolls, to react. And soon these actions or reactions will become easy to perform, for any act with practice becomes easy. Thus, a new and good habit is born. For when an act becomes easy through constant repetition, it becomes a pleasure to perform, and if it is a pleasure to perform, it is man's nature to perform it often. When I perform it often, it becomes a habit, and I become its slave, and since it is a good habit, that is my will. So he's teaching us a great lesson, Millie, and that is when we exercise consciousness and we're here, we begin to feel a vitality we've never known before. Our enthusiasm will rise. Our desire to meet every fear at sunrise. We actually can feel the joy just by being aware and sitting here. That's great news. You got that? Has everybody got that? We don't have to wait till the habit is established. Simply being aware and conscious and choosing to be here, we can feel the joy already. That helps us stay here. Now, we keep reading the scrolls. We keep reading our affirmations. We'll hear about all those as we go through the process. We start creating a new neural pathway, and eventually that old habit's trimmed off, and we get to live here in that great feeling because it's a new habit. Our habit is now over here, not over there. It doesn't take consciousness to be here. That's now a habit. Now our consciousness is applied to another one of those bad habits, and we shift that one, then we shift the next one, then we shift the next one. This is such a beautiful thing to know, that we can be conscious and we can change. Both of those things. Gosh, you got me on a soapbox. So I'm sorry, Millie. Was that okay?
Thank you, Dave. That helps a lot. I'm going to change chairs now.
Good. Jump over here. This is a much better chair, right?
I like it better.
Oh, we're so much more productive here. Yes.
This is Eva. I just had a quick kind of technical question. Earlier when you were talking, you were saying page numbers, like page 11, page 19. What are you referencing?
The PDF that was sent out to everyone?
Yeah, I don't think I got that one.
Oh, okay. That was Eva, is that right?
That's right.
Would you check your... what would you call it?
I downloaded the first chapter, and I got the email about the call, but I didn't get the PDF.
Okay. Well, would you check your junk email just to see if it got sent there? And I will make sure that Nikki has one to you tomorrow. Anybody else is missing their PDF for the book?
Yes, Sharon.
Sharon, are you missing yours as well?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay, well, I'll make sure you have the whole book, because when you bought the book, you received the whole PDF. That was just so you could start reading it right away. You're supposed to receive it. If we've had a couple of those fall through the cracks, I apologize, Eva and Sharon. We'll take care of that first thing in the morning.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Any other questions about this comparison game? Am I the only one here on the phone who's played this game?
No.
They tell us statistically that 85% of women play this game at a very difficult level. That's why I wrote the sentence in there about taking the best from 10 people and creating this composite person, then beating ourselves up for not stacking up. We are really hard on ourselves.
So, Dave?
Yes?
When you say that women do it, you said dangerously?
Yeah, to a dangerous level, uh-huh.
Can you elaborate on that?
Certainly. A dangerous level would be when we are looking outside of ourselves at someone else and feeling less than. The dangerous level occurs that when we are so preoccupied with our self-deprecating dialogue about not being enough or not being pretty enough or not being smart enough or not being rich enough or not being something enough, all of the time that we're in that space, opportunities are walking by us. And we're not seeing them. And we rob ourselves of those opportunities. We also rob others of our greatest gifts because we're not available. We're in the world, but we're really not present because we're preoccupied internally by this self-deprecating dialogue. That's why I say, if I said half the things to you that your thought processes say to you, could we still be friends? And we measure the assessment. I can't wait for all of you to have your assessment with us next week. We'll take a look at it and go, I can show you exactly where the dialogue is occurring and help you start to hear it. Because I still remember the first time I heard mine. I talk about it in the later chapter in the book. I'd done something really crazy. Business decision didn't go so well. And I remember saying, David, you are so stupid. And it was the first time I'd heard it. I just want to help you start to hear it. Hearing it wasn't like I created that thought process. I realized this dialogue, this harmful, dangerous dialogue had been going on for decades. And I thought, what have I missed? What opportunities have gone by when I was in the middle of this space doubting? Because when we're in this space, I'll tell you one more dangerous thing is a great question. When we get into this space, we can actually go into a space where the body prepares us for war. We're going to have cortisol released into our sympathetic nervous system and kind of get one of those anxious kind of feelings. It's actually consuming cells in our body. It's preparing our tissues for wound repair. We can have our fight or flight center activated and parts of our empathy and practical judgment shut down and our memory shut down. We'll talk about this in unmet expectations. When these behaviors are going on, we are actually mentally impaired. That's dangerous. That's what I mean by dangerous. We miss opportunities. People don't get the best of us, and we're actually less than totally capable. It's like having gone into a bar and had several swigs of whiskey and we're climbing into a car and drinking drunk. We're walking through life, but we're not totally present, and we are not totally capable of being present. This is a dangerous place to be, especially in a time in history when we don't have time to make mistakes. We don't have time to be impaired. We will want to be conscious and alert and awake. And one of the first places we're going to look is this comparison game. So that's part of your homework assignment tonight, will be to start doing your inventory. I want to do as much of this next one as we can with unmet expectations tonight. It's a little heavy tonight because we're talking about all the things that cause challenges. Next week we'll talk a little bit about traumatic events that can occur and secrets. And then we're going to focus 2 weeks on healing. Okay, now that I got a sense of what's creating this for me, but for us to heal, we want to hear. So just catch yourself this week in terms of comparison. When you see something, and it might be things that trigger, could be finances, anything to do with finances. Someone's got a nicer home or clothes or car or expense account or whatever it might be. It could be relationships. You wish you had something different than you have, and you might be looking at other people and feeling a certain amount of jealousy or resentment. Educational issues, consider some of those. Those might be interesting ones. How many could you find where you're comparing you against someone else and feeling less than? Start to hear the dialogue when it occurs. See how often it shows up. Physically, for women, in terms of hair, body type, weight, go down that list. See how often that shows up. And what you're saying to yourself about yourself, just listen to it. Go, wow. Any other comments about that before we move to unmet expectations?
Thank
we doing
you.
Okay so far, everyone?
Yes.
Yeah, this is a little heavy, because this dialogue is really destructive when it shows up. And these are the two most common. Comparison is the first, and unmet expectations the second. Those who coached with me, we've spent a fair amount of time in unmet expectations. This is when we're creating our dreams. We do that in our mind and get a vision of what to do, and then we come into tangible reality and we actually create it. It says in the second paragraph, challenges with self-esteem occur when we choose to move to that chair over there and allow this gift, that's the gift of vivid visualization, to be used destructively. The most common destructive uses of vivid visualization include escape and avoid fantasy, fatigue-driven pessimism, obligation, the need to be right, and counterfeit forms of pleasure. We've got some tough issues to talk about here. Some will apply to some will not. But you may have someone in your life who's struggling with one of these areas. When our secret desires and real intentions are focused on a life of ease and comfort or arrival, I finally arrived, I'm set, and life keeps showing up differently. These destructive uses of this gift are the natural default. We want a more exotic life and seek counterfeit forms of pleasure such as pornography. We can also become slaves to these damaging thoughts. There's a paragraph in here, or a section in here on this topic. It's not a religious issue. I'm not approaching it from that area. I just want to share with you what happens to self-esteem when that's part of a person's life. The more difficult or mundane our life circumstances, this is such an important sentence, the more likely we are to be captured by these destructive habits of thinking. The more likely we are to unconsciously surrender our free will to that chair over there. So just take a look at your circumstances. You want to be hypervigilant in understanding how to use your mind constructively, which we'll go into a little bit of that during this section. Got a whole fourth of the book dedicated to this, and Today I Begin a New Life, which will make a lot more sense to those of you who have that book and have been through a coaching program. As we go through this self-esteem piece, when you go back to use your mind constructively, it'll make so much more sense. Let's go to escape and avoid fantasy. Now, very simply, fantasy means that I go into the future to a time when something has already transpired. I've skipped all the work of getting there. In my mind, I just go to that, and then I begin imagining what it'll be like after that happens. That's called fantasy. Because it's making decisions based on an event that has not yet even occurred and won't occur unless we do the work. We just want it manifest, and we've created in our society a deep burning desire to just have that manifest. And there are gurus in the planet that would actually teach you that. It's scary. All you have to do is tell the universe you're worthy to receive, and it'll be magically manifest. When we understand that vivid visualization manifests inspired ideas and impressions and solutions to challenges that ignite our passion so that it drives our action to actually create it, now we begin to understand how creation works. But tangible reality is never manifest simply because we vividly visualize it. Oh, this is such a destructive thing to self-esteem. Because the vast majority that engage in this vivid visualization, when they're up there at that event and living beyond it, it is so vivid, whatever they're looking at, it is so vivid that the same brain chemistry, brain circuitry is firing that would occur if they were already there. Norepinephrine starts being delivered through the sympathetic nervous system. We feel euphoric. It's so exciting. Challenge. when reality shows up differently, which it always does, the body goes into this defense mode, this cortisol, these fear dendrites, this memory loss. And this is what happens. We turn inward because our mind is so convinced we should have that thing manifest. It should be here. I've already experienced it. I know what it's like. It's so convinced we should have it that we begin to question our worth and worthiness, our ability, our belief systems. Three core foundations of self-esteem. That is human nature. Expectation. Life shows up differently and we're frustrated. We don't, you'd think we would blame the world. No. We wonder, what's wrong with me? Everybody else seems to be doing it. Everybody else who bought a ticket to that seminar seems to be doing it. Everybody else who bought that coaching seems to be doing it. What's wrong with me? And at the most serious levels, does God not love me? This is, I believe, based on our research, the number one cause of self-esteem destruction. This is the number one destroyer of self-esteem. Unmet expectations. And in a world where everybody looks so okay, and very few really are, but our mind wants us to think they are, and we don't have, and everybody else seems to, there's something wrong with us. This is what caused me to cry out. I long to cry to the God of my youth, but the God of my youth will not hear my cry. I must change my God or change my cry. I had to change my cry. Because I've discovered that power will never rob us of the very process through which we stretch and grow and become. But we have grown up in our society wanting to skip all of that and just have it easy. Have it comfortable. No more stress. No more pain. There is no greater destroyer of self-esteem than that desire for ease. That's it. It's a nutshell. When we learn how to use our mind constructively to manifest those ideas, it ignites our passion. Amazing things start to happen. Now, I've given a thorough description, I know, for Sharon and for Eva. You don't have your PDF. You'll have it on page 24, 25, 26. Very clear description of the physiology, what's going on in our bodies. On page 26, when we engage in fantasy, we inevitably experience discouragement, overwhelm, frustration, impatience, and even anger. The antithesis of inspiration and passion. That is inevitable. I mean, it's not just, it probably will happen. They actually use the word autonomic. That's what the neuroscientists, it's something you cannot stop. You fantasize, you will have discouragement, overwhelm, frustration, impatience, and even anger. We may engage in frenetic, non-goal-directed activities when linear time does not keep pace, which it can't. We step into tangible reality. We just want it to happen. We're just, like a chicken with our head cut off. Busy, 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 always busy, always exhausted, never sure of what we've accomplished. We may spend valuable hours worrying, playing out endless worst-case scenarios, and tormenting ourselves over events that may never come to pass. We may stand on the rim of a metaphorical canyon, having vividly visited the other side, and be left feeling desperate in the search for a way to bridge the chasm. We may begin to discount the value of what we have and what we are doing and long for greener pastures or an easier way. We may begin to focus on our lack, starting with our lack of worth and worthiness. We begin to play out endless examples of past errors, past mistakes, such as lapses in judgment, moments of greed, flashes of weakness, while trying to identify the reason why our current failures are unanswered, or our current failures are unanswered prayers. This is such a key piece. It's top of page 27. I want you to focus on this week as we're thinking about unmet expectations. If you look at your assessment as the first measurement in self-esteem, is called whole and complete. It's so common that when something hasn't happened, that we start going back and playing out reasons why it's not happening. Well, when I was a teenager, I did this. Or when I first got married, I did this. Or when I was dating, I did that. Or when I was on this business trip, I did this. Or I made this investment, or I got into that too long, or I should have gotten out earlier. We start looking, this must be the reason why I'm not worthy to have this fantasy manifest. I just want anybody to play, see if you play these things out. Well, it must be my education. I didn't finish this, or I should have finished that, or was my grade point, or I didn't study hard enough. I want you to see how deadly unmet expectations are. Because the sequence is really simple. When we are in fantasy with the extent of the vivid visualization that the vast majority of you have, the mind thinks it's real. It is non-negotiable. And when it doesn't happen, it just starts blowing things up, starting with our self-esteem. Now, that sounds like hyperbole. I'm very exercised on this one. Because I've just seen too many grown men, women too, but grown men weeping. What's wrong with me? What's wrong is we've been using our mind destructively. We've wanted ease. We've wanted comfortable. We don't want any more stress or pain. And we haven't been engaged in life. And we're going to want to go into the process of starting to engage in life and take the clay we've been given and start creating. Top of page 28. All is not lost. The good news is this. We have the gift of vivid visualization. We can see possibilities. Now let us see in a way that manifests inspired ideas, impressions, and solutions to challenges that can ignite our passion and drive our actions. This is such a beautiful thing to know, that which took us into fantasy is the gift. We just used it destructively. Now we start using it constructively, and everything changes. I wrote this in the last two paragraphs on page 29. There was nothing wrong, speaking of my friend, who discovered that he was fantasizing. We are simply sitting in the wrong chair. All we have to do is stand up, move over, and learn how to use our gift of vivid visualization constructively. In doing so, we immediately begin to experience the benefits. True, staying here in the observer's chair will require some diligence. After all, fantasy's alluring. Now we know better than to engage. A few moments of euphoria are never worth the thrashing. Our
Dave?
Self-esteem deserves better.
Dave?
Yes?
Hey, this is Susie.
Hi, Susie.
How are you?
I'm doing terrific. How are you?
I'm good. I have a question.
Sure.
Just in listening to you talk about all this fantasy, and how that seems to, you know, be something that can get people in trouble, what if people are on the opposite spectrum of that and don't go into vivid visualization? How does that affect them?
It's a great question. I had a statement in the book, and I changed it. If I could remember exactly where it was, I would pull it out. I think it's in this section. And it states something like this. I have never met anybody who's unaware of what they're thinking, who discovered, when they became aware, discovered that their thought processes were constructive, positive. People vividly visualize more than they realize, Susie. They just don't consider it vivid visualization. How many times do we find ourselves worrying about something? Because it's almost impossible to be worrying about something without vividly visualizing consequences. What are we worried about? You know, we got a mortgage due and we don't have money to pay the mortgage, and so we start playing out in our mind what could happen. We could lose our house, we could go into foreclosure, we're in vivid visualization. And it is interesting, so answer your question. I'm sure there are those who don't at all. They're very pragmatic and practical. Very. But almost everybody is somewhere in their mind most of the time. The reason why I know this, Susie, you know this, you're in the coaching session. We did the activity called Power Sessions, where we were to be present in the now for 1 hour, three times a day. How many people in our group did that the first week? Just present, just for an hour, three times a day. How many people did that? Do you remember?
Just Iris.
There was one. She was number eight. Uh-huh. I've only had eight. I've had two more in another group do that in the last week. So we've got 10 people now who have done that out of 3,500 coaching clients. So when I see 10, only 10, who under great duress were able to stay present three times a day for an hour, our mind is almost always somewhere else. That's vivid visualization. So if we can't be present in the now, where are we? And the fact that we're unconscious doesn't mean we're not vividly visualizing. It's just that we're not conscious of what we're visualizing. Are you okay with that, Susie?
Yes.
Isn't that strange evidence? Because I've had hundreds of people tell me they don't visualize. And not one of them could stay present in the now. I should say probably thousands. So it leads me to believe that we are just unconscious of where our mind actually is. And Ramona, I could call Ramona in here to have a conversation. This has been one of the great conversations of the 38 years of our marriage. And she would tell you that when she finally became conscious, she discovered that her challenge in becoming conscious is she really didn't want to see what she was thinking about. But the great moment for her is when she did and started to choose to sit in this chair. She came alive. Now, I can tell you that very candidly because she's given me permission to do so. And I remember many times when I said, what are you thinking about, sweetheart? She said, nothing. She wasn't. She thought she wasn't. She, in fact, absolutely was. So my answer is let us become conscious of what it is. I suppose there's probably somebody who doesn't. And some do it at a higher level than others. It's true, yes. We're almost always all somewhere else. And if we are, where are we? Are we worrying? Are we catastrophizing? Are we tormenting ourselves over something that may never come to pass? Are we skipping to a time in the future when things are okay? Where are we going? Where are we going? Susie, come back on the line with me just for a sec.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah. Julene said I'm catastrophizing. She's right.
Now, I don't think you've got any questions of whether you vividly visualize for you. True?
Well, no. I just don't spend... I don't think I spend any time in fantasy, but I might be in fantasy, not know it.
Well, unmet expectations is driven by the vivid visualization to create a fantasy. The other is the catastrophe. And what we're discovering is that a lot of people go right to just little triggers. Almost anything will trigger them to go into something negative. They'll start stewing on something negative. The world's coming to an end. Their business is falling apart. Nobody likes what they're doing. They might as well just go do something else. I mean, we can be there in a nanosecond. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah, it's so easy to do. So that's one of the destructive ways of thinking, and we're going to get into some of that pessimistic thinking right now and the fatigue-driven pessimistic thinking. This is where we're going to pick it up next week. I'm going to honor our hour-long commitment. So when you get your PDF this week, go into fatigue-driven pessimism on page 29. This will resonate with a lot of you. This is the story of the person who was a creator, not a fantasizer. They visually saw something, and then they went after it. They did the work. They got there. and all of a sudden the market has come and their business has contracted. It's shrunk. It's not as big or as vibrant as it used to be, and now they're facing all that work again, but this time without passion, and it's just overwhelming. Everything that needs to be done to get there. This is a huge destroyer of self-esteem. And this time it's not, I'm not sure I don't have the ability. It's just I'm not sure I've got the stamina. I'm not sure I've got the energy. I'm not sure I've got the, well, we're questioning self-esteem. We're questioning our ability to have the energy to sustain that growth pattern again. This is going to be huge. I think there's probably several people on this call who have been going through these challenges with the economy. This would be more apropos to anybody who, and I know, Susie, I know you, you're a natural, intentional creator. It'll be interesting to just examine this section for you and for others who are natural, intentional creators. If anything in your business has slowed down at all, read this little paragraph, these few paragraphs between page 29 and 31, and see if this doesn't speak to you. And I don't want to select you, Susie, as that person. It's just that you are. I know you. I know you're an intentional creator. Then we're going to go into obligation and the need to be right and how these things can destroy self-esteem, and then counterfeit pleasure, a very tender, sensitive section. Let's pick this up next week. Any questions before we... Is this working for you all right?
Yeah.
I want to make these 4 weeks so valuable for you so that as we work through this, you'll start to hear this dialogue. Any questions or comments that will assist me in serving you better or anything I can do to serve you all before we close the night?
No, thank you, Dave.
Well, thank you all for being on the call. I take this as a very sacred responsibility as we go through this. I'll make sure everybody's got a PDF tomorrow, and I look forward to next Monday evening. I'll be calling you all from New York, my daughter's apartment, in Hoboken, New Jersey, overlooking Manhattan. So it'll be very fun to be with you next Monday night calling from New York, and we'll take this on and continue our journey. Oh, one thing I do need to tell everybody. We are leaving this Saturday for New York and Washington, D.C. Our flight home, the only flight we could get on the Monday that worked for us the following Monday, is at 6 o'clock Washington time, which is 4 o'clock Utah time, which puts us in the air during this session. Our schedule for these four sessions, as a result, will be tonight, the 19th. We will not meet on the 26th because we're going to be in the air. Then we'll meet on the 3rd and on the 10th of December. And what's fun, by then we should be shipping books to you. So I just signed off on all the printer's proofs this morning. Very excited to see those. It was great. Everybody have a great week. If you've got any questions during the course of the week on this, my email is dave@augmandino.com. dave@augmandino.com. And we'll look forward to being back with you next Monday. And we'll pick this up with Fatigue-Driven Pessimism, page 29. Thanks, everyone, and good night.
Good night, Dave.
Good night.